There is no land in Connecticut that is not allocated to some entity, a town or city. Now, for lifelong nutmeggers, that might seem like an obvious fact, but for residents of larger states, that's not always true. A state like Alaska will have vast stretches of unincorporated land. Since all the area in Connecticut is incorporated, that means that every square inch of this state is accounted for in the records. Which records? The land records. We're joined today by Jacqueline Purcell, president of the Connecticut Land Title Association, to talk about what land titles are and what makes Connecticut nearly unique in the United States. The Municipal Voices is the Connecticut Conference of Municipalities podcast in collaboration with WNHH LP 103.5 FM. I'm your host, Matt Ford. As always, be sure to give us a like and let us know what you're thinking in the comments. CCM's Municipal Voice podcast continues to present a key forum on important state local issues. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the consensus views of CCM or member municipal leaders. Jacqueline, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So the first question I'm going to ask is going to be pretty straightforward. What exactly is a land title?
Okay, so in Connecticut, it's a very different thing. We have 169 municipalities. So land title is the deed or document that describes or transfers property.
Okay. And you're currently the president of the Connecticut Land Title Association.
Yes, I am.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your organization?
Yeah. So I've been a title searcher for 30 years. And about 3 years ago, I recognized that there is no regulations surrounding title searchers. Well, I recognized it 3 years ago, but it really came into right before COVID. It was a huge thing. So I created Connecticut Land Title Association. And they say, if you build it, they will come. All the title searches started pouring in and we all have the same exact issues with the legislation as far as regulating title searchers. So Connecticut Land Title Association represents those title searchers and the what they do for a living and really surrounding ethics, morals, and regulations.
And so what is the profession associated with land titles? I mean, it just called land title searchers, or is there, you know, assessors assess? What do you have to do for a living to be in a CTLA, LTA?
Anything. You could do any. We accept anybody into the association, even businesses. But a title searcher is something that often our consumers don't understand and they don't know even exists. Because when you buy or sell a house, or you refinance a house, you go to your attorney. In Connecticut, only an attorney can issue what's called title policy. I believe wholeheartedly in that, actually. And then the attorney will either send the title search of your property to the title company that he's underwriting with, or he'll hire a title searcher.
Okay.
And that's pretty much, and we can get into what a title search does, the title searcher does.
What kind of training is required for this position? Do you need accreditation or anything?
No.
Huh.
Nothing. Currently.
Currently.
I have my own title company and I require a lot of training, but currently no. The state of Connecticut does not require any regulation, any training, any education surrounding a title searcher.
Wow. So we alluded to this in the intro, but Connecticut is fairly unique in the way that we keep our land records. And part of the reason we have you here in the Municipal Voice is that we're one of only three states that keep records by municipality. What does that mean and how did we get to be that way?
Okay. So Connecticut, we have 169 municipalities and we house our land records, each individual town, which means it's done a little different in each individual town. Most states are county based and they're different. So every state, it came about differently. So we don't have homesteads in Connecticut, Massachusetts. We don't have well rights. We don't have oil and mineral rights.
Yeah.
So it's just such a different thing. And I think when it very first started, years and years, I mean, our land records go back into the, I mean, I could search a record back into 1901.
Yeah.
You know, and I love that we're individual with our municipalities.
Yeah.
I hope I answered your question, but I tend to, and I'm a little nervous being on, I've been on millions of podcasts, but nothing this forum. So I tend to assume people know things. So please tell me to go into detail if I don't answer the question correctly.
Yeah, I mean, I know things, but do the people at home know the things? That's the real question.
Yeah, exactly.
So if we do it on a town basis, you said that how do the other 47 states do it? It's all county, and is that better, you think?
Well, some of them are registries. Let's take Massachusetts, for
Okay.
example. Massachusetts has registries, which are throughout the state. So they have, I think, I don't know, maybe 20 registries. And in those registries, it would be like if we had New Haven County land records. So all the records from that particular county would be housed in one registry. But then you have a place like Texas or Oklahoma, they have what's called title plants. Title plants are owned individually. So they're private places that carry the land records for that county again. And in Connecticut, I love the municipalities because it's easier to, you live in Brantford, you go down to the town hall, and all your records regarding your land or house are right there.
So you don't have to go searching around trying to figure out who actually has this information in Connecticut. You know, whatever town you're in, just go to town hall and you'll be good to go.
It's funny. When I first started searching so many years ago, I'm dating myself, but when I first started searching, the biggest problem I had was finding the town hall. So I drive around the state and I'm, where's this town hall? And then within the town hall, okay, where's the town clerk's office? But once you get there, it's a vault
Yeah.
and you go inside the vault and that's where all our land records are.
So you got to find the town clerk and get them to let you in. So is this mandated to towns and cities, and does it come at a cost to them?
Is title searching mandated or is it
That
mandated?
they're in charge of it.
Oh,
That they can,
absolutely. Yeah, we
yeah.
have the Connecticut state of Connecticut has a Connecticut state record keeper.
Okay.
And she is the one who is ultimately in charge of all of our records that we keep in Connecticut. And that's including vital statistics and any records that we're.
So it's housed at the in the town halls and stuff and the clerks, but they answer to the state on that.
Yeah, the state record keeper.
Interesting. Recently, these records have started to be transferred to online databases. What was it like before that happened? Where is it just like dusty old books in the, old section of town hall, or how was it done?
Yeah, it still is that way, believe it or not. We have vaults in every town hall, and it's a steel fireproof vault that locks like a bank vault. And that vault door is open every morning to any individual because they're public records that can go in the town clerk's office, go into the vault, and there are books, books and books and books and books. And every book has a volume, every document has a page, and it is still that way. So if there's no electricity, I can still go and search anybody's title. But the problem is when we became technology, we always say is great and bad, right? AI, people have it's controversial, but I believe our land records, when we decided to switch to third-party organizations that house the documents, everything becomes reckless. They can be hacked into. And now, unfortunately, because there's no regulations, oftentimes it is sent offshore to do a title search. And our
Interesting.
land records in Connecticut, they aren't meant to search that way. It's impossible to do a complete title search online.
So how do you do a complete title search?
So for a title searcher, we go in, we start off, we go into the assessor's office. The assessor's always online in Connecticut. And most of the assessors use vision appraisal, and you get a field card, what's called a field card. On that field card, it gives us a lot of information. Realtors use the field card, appraisers, most of the people in the real estate industry use this field card. On that field card, it gives us who the current owner is with a book and page. Now, often that doesn't have to be correct. Because if I bought the house, say I bought a house 6 months ago, that's not going to be on the current field card because
Okay.
they don't get updated regularly. And in Connecticut, it's different in every town again. So
Okay.
some towns may update it yearly, quarterly.
So it's
It
just
can be
up to
very,
the individual town how they handle it.
yeah, absolutely. So after the assessor's office, we take the field card. Everybody does it different. I go to the tax collector's office, I get the tax information on that property. Then from getting the tax information, which obviously is important, we need to know if the taxes are done. I then go into the town clerk's office where I start my search. The reason the field card gives you that book and page is it gives a title searcher a place to start. Today, there's a computer in every single town clerk's office where I could pop in a name and it will give me a list of indexes of what is on that name. But I don't need to do that. With a field card, it gives me a book and page. So I could start there. In a title search world, we work backward, then forward. So I take it
You
back and
find
then
the
I also
oldest
do
record,
the newest. So
kind of the
I take
newest,
the
and then you go back.
newest record, work backward on deeds, and then I take the title forward as well.
So you've mentioned that, in Connecticut, because we're town-based, it's different everywhere. Does your organization have any positions on that? Like, would you like to see it more standardized? Is there anything, or you just like it just the way it is?
No, I think it has to be regulated. It's very reckless right now, very reckless. And one might say because I'm an old-time title searcher, but for an example, one of the third-party vendors got hacked into December of last year. They were down for 3 months. So title searchers couldn't search the land records. My searchers could. We would just go in and do the search the old way.
The old-fashioned way.
But the problem is that the title search industry is declining so rapidly due to this technology we have because most title companies just send it offshore to India. And I have a lot of people I'm very friendly with there that have been searching in India for 10 years. And but in Connecticut, you cannot search a title from India. And consumers, I mean, your audience, home buyers, don't know that because there's an assumption that your attorney's doing the title. Who asks that? That's boring. My job's boring. Who wants to know? If I, even me, when I close, you close a house, you don't say, oh, by the way, who did my title search? It's something that
That's something you paid the lawyer to figure out.
exactly. And our lawyers are good in the state of Connecticut. They're not gonna they don't have to explain. They don't want to explain. It's their job to protect you.
The details you don't need to know about how the software is made.
It's complicated. I tell a lot of people when they say, what do you do for a living? I say, it's complicated.
So we said that this is evolved over the years. What's the oldest land record you've ever looked up in Connecticut? Like, are there some that are like colonial land records and stuff?
Oh, wow. So I do a lot of complex title search. So go back to the 13th century. So, for example, I did Yale. It was a ton of fun. And if you're doing the land records for Yale, it does go back. So I find them from 1919, I think, was one that stuck out in my head because Connecticut still has blue laws that are on deeds, and you look at them and you're like, wow, this actually existed. It's educational because it's kind of disgusting, some of the language on the legal descriptions of who has the right to do what. And it's quite fascinating for me to be able to go back in time and pinpoint what happened this particular time on that piece of land.
To how it progresses over the years and the ownership changes. That's got to be fascinating stuff. Another interesting part of your website in relation to historical records is you put up a land acknowledgement. What is that and why is it important for your organization?
Well, for me, I think we must all acknowledge that we are on tribal land. So that is something that I think is new for a lot of companies when they put that up, but it's an attempt to, I guess, motivate, it's a desire to create equality. And that's really basically what it is, because when we started going way back, we had Indian land. And it's to acknowledge that and respect that, to me, is important as a land person. I mean, it's, you know, it's important that we had, you know, there was an extra burden on Indigenous people, and a lot of the lands were taken, not sold.
Just taken, yeah.
Just taken. So we acknowledge that on our website, because I think it's very important.
So you've mentioned some of it, but what are some of the other pitfalls of transferring these records to online?
Errors. For me, that's the only pitfall I see. There's no opinion for I have no opinion on title. It's black and white. That's why I love it, because there's no arguing, right? It's black and white. There's so now you take our land records and we are transferring them online. And there's a large cost involved. So there's money. There's a large problem with privacy, which, wow, that technology, we can go on and on about privacy, right? But there, I mean, it's public record. So the privacy, although people can argue that it's public records anyway, would it? Somebody in New York would not drive all the way to New Haven, Connecticut to find out who owned the
To go
land
into go to
now.
City Hall to get the piece of paper to
So privacy reasons. And to me, the largest thing is cyber attacks. And what will it look like in 5 to 10 years for a homeowner if our land records can get hacked and records get changed? This is our history. This isn't. You know, I don't want to make downplay someone's credit getting hacked, because I know a lot of people that have had, you know, or their Facebook getting hacked. This is our history getting changed. And that's, to me, we talk about cost. In the state of Connecticut, every town clerk in Connecticut can charge up to $1 for copies. That's our standard. That is the law in Connecticut. But yet, if you do a search online, it's $2. So now, are we searching in Connecticut or are we searching nationally? What is the law when it comes to now being broken because a third party wants their cut? So if you want to get a copy of your deed, we're in Connecticut. You can go to the town clerk, make a copy, pay $1. Now, if you do it online, it's going to charge $2. Also in Connecticut, I can go into any town hall and take a picture on my phone of land records. I pay $20 for that. So I can get 100 documents for $20. Online, 100 documents would cost me $250, because there's also a tax and a surcharge.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's kind of, you know.
So these records are maintained by municipalities, but I imagine that they're not the main people who access them. Who utilizes these records the most?
Title searchers, really, or ants people that are into ancestries, ancestry.com. I've met some great people in the vaults. People that are they're searching their heritage, searching, even who owns this property. It's been in my family since my great 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 grandmother. It's been passed down, and there's 27 grandkids and, you know, relatives. Who really owns the property?
That's wild to think about. You are listening to the Municipal Voice on WNHH 103.5 FM. So if someone wanted to do this themselves, can they?
They can. I don't suggest it, because if you are buying a property and you miss anything that could possibly affect that property in the future, I carry $1 million E&O insurance. There's always somebody to sue. So if you own a property and, I don't know, 2 years from now somebody comes up with a UI comes up with a light pole on the property, you can go back to your attorney and say, whoa, what is this? And often people, it's very complicated, because often people say, I have a title insurance policy. Title, there's title insurance, there's title searches. They're all very different. So all I speak about is, to my industry, what a title searcher is, why you need a title search, and the new thing. And I urge, this is the only really stand that I take about whether you need or you could do it yourself. I urge all consumers, when they see title lock or title for $9.99 a month, $19.99 a month, it is just not something that is needed, because many of our towns now offer it for free. You could go to the town, sign up on a and if they're sign up on a program that they have, and if your property is transferred, immediately the town hall will notify you for free.
Interesting.
Yeah, and that's free.
So that's what the title lock is selling to people that they don't actually need.
Yes, and I would teach anybody for free. We teach a lot of homeowners how to just check it for free, because I don't think there should be a cost to safety.
So, now that title searches are being digitized, what is the future of your profession?
If the bill does not pass to regulate title searchers, there will be no profession. It is already hundreds of title searchers are out of jobs, because why pay a title searcher? This is the thought process. Why would I pay a title searcher $75 when I can pay somebody in India $15 or $20? And we're just being outsourced and run down. And on the call we had with legislation, one of the and I was quite appalled by it. I have three kids. I'm going to say that right up front. I have three. Two are millennials, so I love my kids. They're hardworking, but we were told, well, what are we going to do? These kids are just sitting around. Quote, this is an individual, one of our constituents, sitting around playing video games and doing title searches. So you're going to retire someday. So we have no other choice to give it to them. I was appalled. What industry do you know of, Matt, really, that we're going to say, oh, don't worry, that surgeon, he wants to do it his way. We're not going to teach him the correct way. I mean, I think it's our duty. Public safety is always, I think, everybody's duty. And it's our duty as an industry to protect consumers at all cost. And should there be a $50 cost that's cutting to put a public safety in jeopardy? I don't think so. The lawsuits that have happened, I mean, in Fairfield alone, a piece of property was transferred in Fairfield to an individual, was sold to him with a realtor and attorney. I don't know if you read about it. A realtor and attorney sold a piece of property, had a client, sold the property. They then developed the property, built houses on it. The real owner of that property comes home and says, what the hell is going on? I never transferred or sold my property. But if a licensed title searcher, I believe, if a licensed title searcher did that property and did the title search, it could have been very different. Attorneys will, it's a great debate, because a lot of attorneys will disagree with that statement. But as a home, I am a homeowner, and I don't want anybody but a licensed title searcher to do my property. For God's sakes, I can't put a pool in my yard from anybody but a licensed pool installer. You have to be licensed to be a pool installer, but you don't have to be licensed to search someone's property going back into the 1900s. To me, wow, how is that not reckless? Especially if you look up the job. Title examiner, title searcher, we're also called abstractors, which is the same thing. Okay, let's go to the Department of Labor, because I want to pick a job. I want to go and I want to build a career. So the Department of Labor has a video and a description of what a title searcher is, what their tasks are, what their knowledge supposed to be. And in the knowledge section, they have knowledge of English language, right? We have to, you're reading. Law and government, knowledge of law and government, legal code, laws, court procedures, precedents, government regulations, clerical knowledge, administrative, clerical procedures and systems, customer and personal service. Well, we all have to have that anyway, right? We're supposed to have that. Computers and electronics, because we type our reports, mathematics. is very important in title searching. Knowledge of arithmetic, algebra, geometry, calculus, very important. And
Really?
geography. Yeah, I
Well,
mean,
how does math work into it?
we have a legal description. So you say I live at 12 Main Street. I say you live at 20 degrees south, 13. So for us, there's a legal description that is attached to almost every document on the land records associated to your property. You can't search by address. That legal description gives you the meets and bounds. So it'll say southerly by estate, blah, blah, blah. And and then northerly, then east, west. And I could look at that as a searcher and draw your property
Even if it's
because of
not
that.
like square, even if it's
Correct.
irregular.
Yes, correct. Because however, I don't want to say assessor, because whoever the person that surveys your property, when the surveyor, an engineer surveyor, does your property, it's all about math. So as a title searcher, that's one of the things you need to know. And it also states on the Department of Labor's website that you should at least have a bachelor's degree. And there is a video describing all of this, but that's not what we regulate, that we don't do that. Anybody could be a title searcher.
So
You could math. I'll teach you. It'll be fun.
you have the Department of Labor on one hand basically saying that this is a job that needs education and special skills and whatever, but on
Yes.
the other hand here, that it's just the wild, wild west.
Correct. And it'll say the average annual statewide salary for a title searcher is $65,000 a year. And it's just not. It's saying $31.53 an hour. It's so screwed. So now you have the Department of Labor stating. So now if someone looks at that, I think I have these skills. I want to do this for a living. Well, how is that possible? Because you can't just go to the town hall and learn how to title search. Someone's got to train you, but there is no training.
So ultimately, your organization would like to see there be some sort of s standards for accreditation in the field.
Absolutely. I think a lot of organizations, I think homeowners would like to see that. They just don't know. And that's one of the reasons I'm on your podcast, awareness. I think awareness for anything is important, but how could there not be? There's not one profession in the real estate industry that you do not have to be licensed except a title searcher. Yet I have to carry $1 million E&O insurance because I am the last of the line. So there's a problem with your property. You're going to go to the attorney that did your closing. That attorney is now going to call the title insurance company up, and that title insurance company say, "Hey, we didn't do this search," and they're going to call me up, and it's my fault. So ultimately, how is it possible that the one person who it's our fault if there's errors are not regulated? It's out of control, if you ask me.
That's pretty wild.
It really is pretty wild. Now, I'll share something with you and your viewers. Often people will say, "Well, you know what? Jacqueline's very hypocritical doing this work." The reason I do this work is in 2008, when the mortgage industry crashed, I did get into trouble for mortgage fraud.
Oh,
I
wow.
had a partner that was an attorney, and the fraud that was going on in 2008 was, we all know,
Was
was
crazy, yeah.
crazy. Yeah, I had friends, paralegals going to prison. I spent 7 months in Danbury Federal Prison in 2015.
Wow.
It shocks it, you know, I don't say that. I lead with that often for a couple of reasons. I lead with that because people define you by your poorest choice. That's number one. Number two is since 2015, I had to rebuild my life and my credibility. I also learned incredibly about motive, convenience, and availability. And thought if title searching was licensed, then could anybody have committed that, any of that fraud that happened? The answer is no. It's absolutely no. And I'm in a lot of spaces as an advocate for regulations, and I'm a certified fraud examiner. I work with Department of Justice. I work with Department, yeah, I do a lot of this because what I also learned was ethics and values. And when you make a poor choice in your life, it's not the poor choice that defines you. It's what you do with that poor choice. And wow, I learned about diversity. I learned about land acknowledgments. It would have never occurred to me that we should honor individuals whose land was taken. And being in this industry, and I have a title search company, I don't promote it because it's not about that. We have a title search company. I have 15 title searchers that work for me. And it's important they know, look, if you make a poor choice or a bad mistake on something, this is what can happen. It was my poor choice. I don't believe in mistakes, actually. There are mistakes that happen, but I believe in free will. So I made a very poor choice, first time in my life. It taught my three children a lot. It taught my husband a lot. But I think it's so important, and that is the first thing that anyone in the industry will come and attack me with. So I lead with it and state that no, that is why I do this, because of fraud. It's insane. I recently uncovered a large fraud that title search, part of our job as a title searcher is we record documents on the land records for attorneys. After your closing, the deed and the mortgage is often given to a title searcher to record. I got a deed in the mail from an attorney that we've never done business with before. And it didn't, a lot of it doesn't come to me anymore because my title search company is being passed to my daughter. So one of our title searchers took it from the mail and brought it to Easton Town Hall to be recorded. He opened it up, he took it out. There was two money orders that were written out in Sharpie, one to the state of Connecticut, because when we sell a property, we have to pay property conveyance tax. I won't go into the tax issue, but we do. We have to pay it to the state and the town. And there was $62 in cash. And he gave it to the town clerk. And the town clerk said, "You're short $60 for the recording." So he called the office. And I said, wait, there was cash? Bring it back. Do not record it. Take it. There was cash in that envelope." Brings it back. The attorney's name was on the front. I Google this attorney. I've never heard of him. And not much came up, but his father was an attorney. And his father went to prison 3 years ago for $1 million fraud on his trust account. A red flag went off for me because I know fraud. I also, as a title searcher, recognized that there was not an inch margin. You have to leave an inch margin when you're typing up any document. So when it is recorded in those wonderful red or white books, you can read it. So
Because it's
any,
bound
yeah.
on the one
It's
side.
bound on one side, right? And that's our standards. So if anybody who's typing up this document is in the legal profession, they would know that. And there wasn't. Then I noticed it was from a company to a company. So a company was purchasing this property for $157,000. So I look up the property. We didn't do the title search. I didn't know anything about this property. The property is worth $1 million. An individual bought it at auction in 2020. It then got transferred by a quick claim deed to a company. That company took $1 million mortgage out, then sold it for no dollars to another company. That company was now selling it, that's the deed that was in my hands, for $157,000. So right away, so this is where I really started to get into this recklessness. So I called, a friend of mine who's an FBI agent, and he said, "Well, who do you call? Who do you call with this stuff?" And I said, "Nobody." And he said, "What do you mean nobody?" I said, "We're not regulated. I have nobody to call. I want this out of my office. I do not want this sitting on my desk. It's not mine. The attorney's phone number has been disconnected. I can't find him anywhere." And The original email that came to us telling us they were sending this to us was scrap2advocate@hotmail.
Wow.
And I flipped out on our admin. I said, "You didn't recognize that wasn't an attorney's." These are the things. I mean,
Yeah.
obviously, I recognize the little things. So my friend at the FBI said, "Call the local police department." So I called the state's attorney, the U.S. attorney first. And with the unfortunate part that I do know the U.S. attorney through what I did many years of, over a decade ago, but the U.S. attorney recently gave me an award as well. It wasn't the actual U.S. attorney. I received an award from my sentencing judge, who was in the audience, and the U.S. attorney was in the audience. So I got to talk to her, and she said, "Okay, well, who call the Connecticut Bar?" And I said, "I'm a member of the Connecticut Bar. They don't. I'm a member of the real property section. What are they going to do with it? They're not. I called the insurance commission, the state of Connecticut insurance commission. Their answer was, okay, who regulates this? Now here's this deed in my hand that's fraudulent. So I called the police department, and they said, well, it's civil. I said, no, it's not. I don't care what you say. I want you to come here, take this out of my office, and I want you to give me a police report." I want it on writing, and this is the police report. I want a number. I just want it out. And so this great police officer came. She's wonderful in my town. And I explained it to her, and she was outraged that no one regulates this. This document would have been recorded on the land records if one of my title searchers didn't look at it. Because often, if it's short money, we'll put it in for our attorney and then just tell the attorney, "You owe us X, Y, and Z." But there should never be cash involved in any real estate transaction, and money orders from the post office. So when I'm talking this kind of fraud, when you're not regulated, fraud just continues, and it starts getting larger and larger and larger and larger, and it's a
You're not talking
snowball.
about small amounts of money here.
Yeah, how do you sell a $1 million property? Oh, by the way, those two mortgages I told you they took were never released. They were never paid. So they were transferring the property, taking mortgages out, and then just getting rid of it again. And those mortgages are not paid. And when you, a title searcher has to clear, my job is to write a report of anything that's open on the property. Those two mortgages were open. They were not paid or closed or released.
That's pretty wild.
Yeah, it's really crazy. And it's really crazy for somebody who not only knows fraud, who knows what committing fraud does to your family and your community and the victim, especially. My victim was Wells Fargo. And although they're a large bank, they're still a victim. And if I can make that mistake in 2008, and I'd never even had a parking ticket, not mistake, if I can make that poor choice in 2008, right? To in a split second, because there was no income, no verification mortgages, I needed to fund my payroll. I had a huge company with an attorney at that point in time. My whole family worked for me. And in my mind, the only thing that I thought was, I can't fail. How can I literally, tell my family, sorry, the industry's imploding, go home, which I should have done. Shame on me. Instead, I took a mortgage on my own home and funded my payroll with it. Which, what was I thinking? I was hurting myself as well because I had to pay that. I was paying that mortgage. And you don't just go to prison and not have to pay people that you've wronged.
You still got to pay the
Yeah, I still got to pay it. Like, what was I thinking of putting myself in that position? But, that's what I see happening in the title industry. The implode of mortgages in 2008, I see that implode of the title industry coming, and it's going to be coming hard. No one seems to, in the state, when we don't know, I mean, what you don't know, you don't know. Sometimes it's easier when you don't know. But I learned you need to know, because if you don't, you'll end up in a very bad position. And I think not regulating this particular industry is so reckless, and why anybody would disagree in my mind, I can't comprehend that because I'm a common sense person. And most of the people on our call the other day with state representatives deciding if this is going to move forward disagreed with me. And disagree. We had seven title searchers that all agreed. We had two attorneys that agreed, but the title insurance companies disagreed because of money.
So is that kind of your main, the main voice on the other side? Is those companies?
They're the power.
Yeah.
Title companies give the power to the industry and money. Attorneys make 60% of the title policy for the state of Connecticut. So whenever you're purchasing a home and you're purchasing that, you have an attorney, you hire an attorney, right? Mr. Smith attorney. He's going to represent me. He is there for my best interest. Yet he is selling me a title insurance policy that is covering the lender only. That to me, okay, if you are there for my interest, how could you be selling me an insurance policy that's not covering my interest, covering the lender? Now, granted, mortgage companies require this title insurance company, this title insurance policy. So attorneys sell you this. You also have the right to purchase a owner's policy, which does cover you, but it only covers you backwards. So it covers you from the day you purchase the property backwards. I don't know. I feel that if we, why wouldn't we add another layer of protection onto our consumers who are already paying for that? If you're already paying $225 for a title search, it doesn't cost the consumer any money, but it does cost the title insurance industry money. The attorney money. That's where the cost is, because my feeling is if I'm doing the title search on your property, my name, my company name should be on that settlement statement, and the amount I charge should be on that settlement statement. So if there's a pr problem, even the consumer can come back to me. Consumer, if the consumer doesn't know I exist and there's a problem and the attorney's retired, what do they do? Well, they should know who did the title search, and they should have the right to choose. You know, I want this company to do my title search because they're good. I don't want the guy in India to do it because how is he going to find any open building permits? It's crazy. I mean, I'm getting my real estate license. So I finished my real estate class, and it was interesting because I love my instructors. They're licensed realtors. They had to teach me title search 101. What's a deed? What's this? Because as a realtor, being licensed, we have to know this, and we have to know how to get this. But you don't have to know it when you're actually a title searcher doing it.
That's weird.
And I had great discussions about it, and it was shocking to me that it was even touched upon, quite frankly, because I didn't know the real estate industry at all. Not industry, I didn't know the realtor's job, but the realtor said to me, "Do you know, Jack, I do my own building and zoning searches." What? It's part of the search. He goes, "No, we have to order it separate now." And I was confused. I said, "What do you mean you have to order it separate? A building and zoning search is not done on your property unless a realtor orders it separately." Because how can somebody who's sitting in India go into the building and zoning department and say, "I want to see the maps and I want to know what permits are open?" They can't. They just can't. So I could talk all day on this, Pat. Like we could have segment 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, because every industry. I've been a paralegal. I was a loan officer. I was a licensed loan officer. It goes on and on and on and on. And I have lived experience of all of the
All sorts of
industries,
aspects,
all sorts of things that brought me to the person I am today. That, wow, I wish I was who I am today over a decade ago, but I'm not. So all I can do is sit here and educate the community and municipalities that you have meetings about. And just great podcast. So I thank you for my platform because.
Well, thank you for coming on the show today. We really appreciate it. Jacqueline Purcell of the Connecticut Land Title Association, thanks for sharing your insight into this
Thank you.
kind of relatively unknown industry. We'd like to thank our guest, Jacqueline Purcell. The Municipal Voice is a co-production by CCM and WNHH 103.5 FM. Christopher Gilson is our producer, Harry Draws is on the boards, and I'm Matt Ford, your host. Be sure to check out our Facebook page and give us a like, and watch out for our CCM chat series on our YouTube page.